Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture. One of the most central issues that Cicero grapples with in his dialogue on friendship is the basis of genuine friendship, friendship in the fullest sense. And this was a controversial matter back in ancient times, as it does remain so for many in our own time. So he's asking this question, and he recognizes it is very important. What is the source and basis of true friendship? And there's more than one possible explanation for this. Now, one explanation that many people give, and this might actually be a sign that you don't want to be friends with them, is that it's ultimately due to needing something from the other person. And there's good ways to put this, and also bad ways to put this, or we might say less positive ways, when we talk about friendships ultimately being merely transactional, or we suggest that not only do opposites attract, but it's opposites within the relationship that keep the relationship going. We're saying that one person is supplying something that the other person can't themselves provide, and that's the reason why they're attracted to each other, and that's the reason why they would stay with each other, and that's the reason why they would do good things for each other, and that's the reason why they would feel goodwill or affection towards each other, which are absolutely central in friendship. Now, you know, we could put it in terms of complementarity and think about romantic comedies and all of those sorts of things. Oh, you find somebody who's very unlike you and they introduce some spice to your life because you're a straight-laced person and they're the punk, or vice versa. You know, they get you're the spontaneous artistic person and they provide order to the chaos of your life. Well, Cicero would still lump that in with this rather mercenary, cynical, transactional view on things. And he suggests that there's actually a better explanation. So he raises this question and he says, "The more I reflect on friendship, the more it seems to me consideration should be given to this question, whether the longing for friendship, the desire for having friends, is felt on account of weakness and want, so that by the giving and receiving of favors one may get from another and in turn repay what he is unable to procure of himself." That's one alternative, the way that he's putting it. Or here's the other alternative. He says, "Although this mutual interchange is really inseparable from friendship," you've got to have that, "whether there is not another cause, an older cause, a more beautiful cause," right? "One that in this translation emanates more directly from nature." In the Latin here, it's magis a natura ipsa profecta, that it arises or it's brought to being from nature, out of nature. And now when Cicero says nature, don't think, you know, the way that some people frame it today, this Darwinian, you know, nature red in tooth and claw, or what evolutionary biologists and psychologists and whoever evolutionary things wants to frame it, because that would actually be a very truncated conception of nature. That would actually fit much better in with the, well, you have friends because of weakness and want. You need to get something from somebody else, and so our genes tell us to do this, or, you know, it's adaptive. Cicero says, no, nature is vaster and more complex than that. You might think of this as it's coming out of the very basis of our being, which is to some degree a plentitude rather than a want or deficit. And so he goes on and he tells us that friendship, genuine friendship, not just friendship in terms of usefulness or even what Aristotle called the friendship of pleasure, but genuine friendship where we want to know the person themselves. We want to be with them because of who they are, and we develop this intimacy where we value the friend not just for what we're getting from them, but for what they are and what we can be in a relationship with them. So he says that in this kind of friendship, there's nothing false, nothing pretended. Whatever is there is genuine and comes of its own accord. Therefore, it seems to me friendship springs rather from nature than from need and from an inclination, an applicazione of the soul with some feeling of love, sensu amandi in the Latin, rather than from calculation of how much profit the friendship is likely to afford. And he provides us with a number of different considerations to support this. He tells us first that if we observe even just animals and then other human beings, which are animals too, we notice that this inclination and this feeling of love or affection is indeed natural to animals. Now he gives, you know, the commonplace of, he says, this feeling may be perceived even in the case of certain animals, which up to a certain time so love their offspring and are so loved by them that their impulses are easily seen. And you know, this is the go-to in ancient thought, but, you know, given all that we now know about animal behavior and its seeming plasticity, you can find cases of animals brought up with each other, very different species, sometimes not even mammals and other mammals, but mammals and birds that somehow create a kind of friendship where they clearly enjoy each other's company, they have something in common, they take care of each other, they show affection to each other. You might think, for example, of you see a lot of these videos on YouTube, the one with the owl and the cat who would play with each other. Or other examples, you can come up with countless ones. Human beings do this in terms of familial relationships. Not every family is a good family, of course, but he says there is an affection that we can find even more evident in human beings from the affection existing between children and parents, which cannot be destroyed except by some execrable crime. And again, from that kindred impulse of love, which arises when we've met someone, and we'll look at that in a moment. Now, notice that Cicero is not saying that it's an automatic thing, this affection between parents and children. It's something that has to grow. Nowadays, we think of it in terms of attachment, right? And there could be reasons why it doesn't work. A terrible crime? Abuse of the children, neglect of the children. In that case, children may not, in fact, feel affection towards their parents. Or they might feel a kind of tragic affection, which will never be satisfied. And there are some parents who are genuinely horrible parents, probably shouldn't have their kids. But in most cases, I think we can say that we see across cultures, across time, this impulse there. And Cicero says this comes from nature. It's even more so in the case of people, he says, who share with us some habits and nature. And the word for habits there is mores, moribus actually here, cuius cum moribus et natura congruamus, right? And so this notion of agreement or a commonality, congruamus, we are congruent literally in it. We are able to be on the same page with them. So we feel some affection towards them. Now, you might say, well, okay, so bad people like hanging out with other bad people. They could be sharing in all sorts of bad habits, and maybe people have a bad nature. And Cicero says, really, this works the most when we're talking about good people, when we're talking about those who have virtue and those who have a kind of uprightness, and he uses this word probitas there, as opposed to some of the other vocabulary that we might expect to see in the Latin. And uprightness, rectitude, doing the right thing, honesty, these are all sort of synonyms for each other. So when these people appear to be upright and virtuous, then we are attracted to that. He says that we see in our friend, as it were, a sort of lamp of uprightness and virtue. And then Cicero goes on and he says something that I think a lot of people might find kind of controversial. There is nothing more lovable than virtue, nothing that more allures us to affection. Since on account of their virtue and uprightness, we feel a sort of affection, even for those we have never seen. And he says, is there anyone who does not dwell with some kindly affection on the memory of Gaius, Fabricius, and Manius Curtius, though he never saw them? like us if we're interested in them. And he goes through another set of people who we hate, even though we've never met them. Tarquin the Proud, Spurius Cassius, or Spurius Maelius. Looks like the Spurius must have been problematic, right? And he even talks about, again, against two leaders, we had bitter struggles for the Empire of Italy, Pyrrhus and Hannibal. Now, this is interesting. These are two people who were sort of the big baddies, the enemies of the Roman Republic. Pyrrhus was somebody who we don't know very much about typically, although we can look at his biography if we want to, because of the word Pyrrhic victory, because he threw in so many troops and lost so many troops in winning that he said another victory like this will lose me the war. Pyrrhus was in a place called Epirus, and he had sort of world conqueror ambitions. He was modeling himself after Alexander the Great, and he was one of the people who went down in the history. Likewise, Hannibal was the great Carthaginian general who almost did defeat Rome and famous for taking elephants across the Alps, but even more famous for being a brilliant strategist. And the two of them, he says, we can look at them in opposite ways. Pyrrhus, we like because of his uprightness. We don't have any great hatred for him. We actually admire him. Hannibal, we hate because of his cruelty. So those who we don't even know, but we see as virtuous or vicious, we have a natural response of loving or hating them. We could think about our own time. Think about all the media people that we encounter in our day-to-day life. We don't actually encounter them. We only encounter them virtually. And what we encounter is a tiny, tiny sliver of who they are, maybe completely different than who they are in reality. Although, you know, we do have little windows into that as well. But we have these responses of love and hatred. We would be friends with people who are virtuous and upright. And so this is something that Cicero thinks is natural to us. Does this mean that it's a guaranteed thing? No, because there could be, you know, vicious people who like other vicious people. But this is something that does, he says, hold for the most part. And a little bit later in the work, in chapter 14, he also talks about virtue knitting together friendship. And he says that if there should be some exhibition of shining virtue to which a kindred spirit may attach and adjust itself, then when that happens, love must needs springs forth. And he talks about, you know, how silly it is that we love all sorts of inanimate things and then, you know, wouldn't love another person. And he says that it'll be granted as a fact that good people love and join to themselves other good people in a union which is almost that of relationship, propinquitas, and of nature. He says, for there's nothing more eager or more greedy than nature for what is like itself. So when we are attracted to those in whom we see some modicum of virtue, it's in part because we do, in fact, like virtue. But it's also because, you might say, the virtue that's within us, however developed or underdeveloped it is responding to what we see in the other person. It doesn't quite work the same way with vice. There can be a superficial liking. But vices are things that we actually don't like about ourselves and usually don't like in other people. As a matter of fact, other people can sometimes be the mirror for what jerks we are and how much moral development we need to undergo. So Cicero thinks that all of this happens by way of our human nature rather than simply some calculation or transaction. So the basis of friendship is really something natural, the basis of genuine friendship.
Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/Sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.